This interview is being conducted on June 2nd, 2010, with Mr. Harold Stillman at the Indian Prairie Library in Darien, Illinois. My name is Deb Barrett. Mr. Stillman was born on March 7th, 1928 in Chicago, Illinois. He is a consultant in ladder accidents and learned of the Veterans History Project through an item in the Chicago Tribune. Mr. Stillman has kindly consented to be interviewed for this project. Here is his story. Harold, where were you living when you entered the service? What was your life like it just before you went in?
I had just completed college, and I had completed college in June, and of course the war started in June in Korea.
And what year was that?
1950.
Okay. Where did you go to school locally, or?
I started out because it was difficult to get into school in that period of time, but after I started in 46 or so, and people were coming back from the war, and colleges were full,
right.
Pretty much. So I finally decided the easiest thing to do would be go to a junior college.
Okay.
So I went 2 years to Wright Junior College in Chicago.
Okay.
And then I decided that I would go further and get a complete college education. And I went to the University of Illinois, and I started out, they used to have school at Navy Pier.
Right.
And so I...
what is now the University at Chicago.
Right. And so I went there for a 6 months, and then actually during that period of time, because I went into civil engineering, mm-hmm. which I wasn't planning on going, but I wanted to go in electrical. My father had done some electrical work, and I was interested in that. And I took that in high school, but there were so many fellows coming back from the Navy and things, and electronics and so forth, that you just couldn't find any openings. So I got into civil engineering. So that was the simplest thing to do at the time. So I went into that, and so I went down to Navy Pier. And then one of the things you do in civil engineering, I went to surveying and on the campus there, and then summer camp up in Wisconsin for surveying.
Okay.
And because civil engineer does a lot of surveying, and the way it turned out, I did a lot of surveying, a lot of surveying in the military. So it worked. That worked out good.
Okay. So you had a lot of there were a lot of World War II vets who were going to school. So
correct.
Okay. So were you living at home at the time, or?
Yes, I was. I lived in Chicago.
Okay. So you were at home. You just graduated. Were you drafted? Did you enlist? How did you end up?
Well, when I finished my first couple of years in the Chicago area, I had went down to the Champaign Urbana campus, mm-hmm. and that would have been 48. See, what happened was in about 46 or so, they terminated registration for the military. But then in 48, they started it again.
You mean at the university?
Well, they just started all over the country.
Right.
So I was down there at the time, just getting started, and so I registered for Selective Service in 48.
So registration for the draft, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And so that I finished there, and then after graduation, which took place in June, I went up with my folks to a fishing trip up north, and we weren't in communication with the outside world or out in fishing camp. And the war started over in Korea, and I didn't even know about it till we got back again. And then I had a short temporary job inventorying and appraising the gas works in Chicago, just to have something to do, because I wasn't drafted mm-hmm. yet. And then finally, in October, I was drafted and went into...
So this was October of 1956.
No, 50.
I'm sorry, 1950, yes. Right. 1950. Yeah. What was your family's reaction when you were drafted? What was your thought?
Well, I didn't really have any strong uh-huh. feelings one way or the other. It just looked like I had to go in, and that was it. But one thing I should bring out at this point, because of the fact that they were not drafting in that earlier, you know, after they stopped it and, after the end of the war, they were looking for enlistments. And so they came up with a classification called scientific and professional personnel.
Okay.
And so I was went in to that when I was drafted, so I had that tag on me. And so my all my records were always in a different place than where I was. So it was kind of strange because it kind of changed the way that I was processed quite often. And it held, and so the result is I got some opportunities I wouldn't have had if we'd just gone in straight.
Okay. So were your friends drafted?
Well, let's see. There was, I can't remember anybody particularly.
Or were you one of the first
I met
ones?
People in there, of course.
Right, right.
I either had, I knew of them or knew their name or something, but basically I didn't go in with anybody in particular.
Okay, so you were drafted into the Army.
Army.
Okay. Where were you, where did you report?
Okay, they went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Okay.
Okay, and I was there for just kind of figure out what we're going to do with this, because really things were in turmoil that period of time. You know, they weren't really used to what they're doing. In fact, the first two places I went there and then to Fort Riley, where I took my 6 weeks basic.
In Kansas, yeah.
Yes. I had to carry my own bunk up into the barracks because, you know, they weren't ready for us yet. And so I'd carry my own bunk. So then I went to Fort Riley, and then I took 6 weeks. And see, basic training was 14 weeks, but this was a preliminary 6 weeks.
Okay, so let's back up and talk about that. You were inducted at Fort Leonard Wood, or you were inducted in Chicago, and then was sent
I basically was inducted in, I guess it would be Chicago.
Where in Chicago?
Downtown someplace. I don't remember. Okay. Exactly. It was some building.
Okay.
Put on a train and shipped out there.
Was it a passenger train? Was it a troop train?
No, it was just, you know, they took a section of it.
And Amtrak or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
They didn't have Amtrak in those days.
Right.
Then they went from there.
Were you on a car with other young men who'd been inducted?
Yeah, right. We were all put in one little section, right?
Okay, and you traveled to Fort Leonard Wood on the train.
Right.
How long did it take?
It wasn't too long. I don't remember those details.
Just a real short thing.
Yeah, it was pretty short, yeah.
Okay. Do you remember any of the talk on the train, or?
No, nothing. I can't remember any of that.
Okay, so you got to Fort Leonard Wood, and what happened?
It was just a kind of a...
How were you greeted there when you got there? What did they say?
I don't know, it was just everything was kind of, you know, in mass, you know, you just get in line, to call your name off, you get blood work and all that type of thing. And
so you got shots, you got blood work, what else?
I don't remember
happened?
Any shots particularly,
oh, okay.
But I just remember they check and make sure you don't have some disease they don't want.
You got your supplies?
Well, they give you a uniform.
Right.
Right, yeah. We didn't have a uniform until we got there.
Okay. What happened to your civilian clothes?
I don't know.
I
probably sent them home.
Okay.
Most likely. Or I may have kept them, figured that if I had to go someplace eventually, I'd have, you know, something to go out with if I didn't want a military unit. But
okay.
I don't remember wearing too many civilian clothes.
So you got there, they gave you your uniform, they did your blood work. How many guys were there, do you think? Any idea?
I don't remember how many went in at one time. We had the, some significant people. We had one guy who was a basketball star at University of Illinois. I remember him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his name, but I remember he was in the group that went in. And that's the only person I kind of remember.
Okay. And after you got all your supplies and your blood work, what did they do? What was your next step?
You know, I'm a little fuzzy on exactly what took place. It wasn't that significant, so
right.
I didn't really register that much. And then all I knew is that they wanted us to send some even though I was in this particular program, it was handled differently.
Right.
They said we have to have your basic training. So the thing was to get the 6 weeks of basic training in the initial part of it.
And that was at Leonard Wood?
No, that was at Fort Wright.
So you were inducted?
In Leonard Wood.
Okay.
And then I was inducted in Chicago, actually.
Right.
But then my first stop was Leonard Wood
For processing.
It's just a few days.
And then from there you went to Fort Riley, Kansas.
Right.
And that was your basic training.
Right.
Tell us what basic training was like.
Well, it was, things that you like, don't like, and getting up early in the morning and all that type of thing.
And they woke you up gently, right?
No, sure.
How did they wake you up?
Oh, I don't remember. Just somebody comes in and yells it out. I guess that's about it. And there wasn't anything that happened. It was significant, really. Of course, when you're away at school a couple years, you're used to living in. Actually, when I was going to school, mm-hmm. I lived in what they call the playground units. And mm-hmm. they had been built for married couples during World War II. It was
okay.
Not far from Memorial Stadium in Champaign. And so I was kind of used to. It wasn't quite like a barracks, but it was but it was closer than home anyway.
Right, right. Okay. So they did what, physical fitness? You did calisthenics.
Well, yeah. One of the things, of course, is the. They hadn't been doing it for a while now,
mm-hmm.
so the result is that they were sometimes they were like they say a page ahead of you on the training, and so wasn't anything that was particularly grueling. You had the long hikes and get out in the parade grounds and do some exercises and things like that,
you learned how to use a rifle and.
Yeah, a little bit. I never did get that much training with the I was only on a rifle range a couple times and I used the that time it was a carbine and then at the M1 and
mm-hmm.
So I never did fire a weapon that often.
Uh-huh.
In the process.
Okay. And do you remember what sort of things they taught you, like in any classes that you might have had?
Well, there wasn't that much in classes and when you're in basic.
Right.
It just everybody does everything in a group, and this was just a mass project going on, marching here, marching there, and trying to get yourself, get the kinks out.
Get discipline and,
discipline and kinks out, and so you're able to do things that will be coming up in the future. And I don't remember now. We had one time where I probably was in this my second 8 weeks that we went to a course where you had the static going in your stomach and they're shooting over your heads I don't think that was the first six weeks.
Was it live ammunition or is it?
They told you it was. Yeah, well, it was or not. I didn't get my head up to find out.
Didn't feel like testing it.
No.
Okay.
And that was they created smoke and everything else. It was just kind of
get
battlefield.
You used to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that was only one time, and then you had to went out. One thing that was kind of annoying, really, they sent us out. This is would have been in the second 8 weeks, but that they sent us out to do this calisthenics and climbing here and doing everything like that, and wore us out all afternoon. Then took us in to take a test for versus Kennedy School. Everybody's pooped out by that time, so it didn't work out too well.
Okay, so you had 16 weeks of basic?
Yeah, all 14 weeks. Six,
14.
Then eight.
Okay, and were all of those at Fort Riley?
No, no. Then after that, they sent us to out to. The way it worked because of this. Special program I was in.
Right.
They handled us differently, so I was sent out to Fort Myers, Virginia, which is next to the Pentagon.
Oh, okay, right.
And there, you know, they were going to, you know, you could have assignment. Well, they had so many people. This program sounded real good in the beginning because they were trying to select different people to enlist and so forth. But now they had a whole ton of them coming in. So they had them. They had the classification. They had to do something with them. But so I said, okay, I think we're going to send you for 8 more weeks of training because we don't know, we can't figure out what to do with you right now. They didn't tell you that, but you could figure out what
their
thoughts were.
So give you something to do while they figured out what to do with you.
Right, yeah. So I went for 8 more weeks at Fort Belvoir, which is just in outside of, in other words, you go from Washington to Alexandria, Virginia to Fort Belvoir, and that's only about 15 miles. And I took 8 weeks at Belvoir.
Okay, and what was different about those 8 weeks from the first?
Not an awful lot different.
Okay.
Just, can't remember the details,
right,
frankly.
Okay, so you had your 14 weeks of basic.
Yeah.
When you finished basic, did they do any sort of ceremony, or were they just trying to push you through?
I don't remember exactly. Wasn't anything special about it. But then, because of this program, then I had to go back to Fort Myers again, and at Fort Myers to go through this process that they go through with these the scientific and professional personnel people.
And what was this process?
Well, they just you'd have formations in the morning and in the early afternoon, and they would I don't know how they did it because I never did get behind the scenes. They would take certain people and call you out, and they'd either give you a detail, you know, clean up the mess hall or something, that, or they would just say, well, now we're going to send you here or there and so forth. And so then you're free to do what you want. So it was going through that for a while. I don't remember exactly how long. And so you got a chance to go places and to take a bus over to the Walgreens and the Pentagon and walk through there and get a haircut there and that sort of thing. The most significant thing that I can remember about some of the things that took place was on a Saturday, four of us decided we'd go over to the Walgreens and we would walk over there. So when you get walked over the little bridge and get over to the front of the Pentagon, there was some steps going up and there was a big limousine parked out there. Went up there, and there were two sets of big doors, and I was in the front of those four people. And I opened the door and walked in, and I see some officers come opening the other door coming out. And I kind of turned my head and looked over on this one man. Seemed like he was a little shorter, and he had 5 stars going around. It was Eisenhower.
Yeah.
And so he said, "Good morning, man." We said, "Good morning, sir." Then we got thrown out because the door was supposed to be closed on Saturdays. So then he went down, and it was a very significant day because he was going from there over to see Truman, and then he was going over to take over the troops in Germany. And so that was that significant thing. And then we were sent to, they had a class what's called Charm School. And I don't remember exactly when I went to that, but that was they give you
etiquette and
training
protocol,
and so forth.
Right.
Yeah, right. And I just remember going to it. I remember too much about it, but from then on, it was this question: what kind of assignment you would get from there? And they said, "Well, okay, you're a civil engineer," so they sent me to the school at Fort Belvoir to teach rigging, which is you tie knots and you climb trees and that type of thing, and poles and that sort of stuff. And so I became a teacher in doing that.
Okay.
So I spent my time during the week doing that, and then I could go into D.C. On the weekends, so forth, and I had fantastic experiences in D.C., experiences that I think about it today. Want to hear the details?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I just won. There was four of us, and we were looking for something to do on a Sunday afternoon, and so we walked over to the why. And Pennsylvania Boulevard is real wide, and there's a medium strip in the center. At least there was a medium strip in the center. And two of the fellows went over to the medium strip, and we were not, I was with another fellow on the curb. And there was a car pulled up out there, and it was, we saw it was at least the one or two women, and they waved us, and so we went over there, and it was the Washington Star, if I remember the newspaper, the society editor. And what happened was during World War II, the American Newspaper Women's Club in DuPont Circle would have military people on the weekends, and they invited this is the first time for the Korean War, the first Sunday, and they invited the wounded soldiers from Naval Hospital, and they didn't show up. So they were out driving around looking for people, and so I was taken there with the other family. And that particular day that we had Kiplinger, the original Kiplinger for Kipling magazines, and a lot of, Senator Holland of Florida, and all these dignitaries and so forth. And the next Sunday, we were written up in the society page. And so I went through every afternoon. I met all kinds of people. And then one time, Kiplinger came back, and he came up to me and he said, "You remember me?" And I said, "Oh, yes, sir, I remember you." So he invited us, three or four of us, out to his home for Memorial Day. And he served, he and his wife served us on the patio.
Very nice.
So went to met this Guggenheim, and he had a place in Rock Creek Park, and he was an old gentleman that time, kind of strange, but he invited, he was going down to his copper mines, I guess. He invited us to go up to his Rock Creek Park. He had a big home, and we had a party out there, and I met all kinds of people. Senator Irvin Durkin's daughter came and got her, and so I just met all kinds of dignitaries.
So did you send all this society news home to your family?
Well, it didn't have to quite. They got into it, too. My mother came to visit me, and so she brought cookies and served them at the club. And so they took pictures of her, and she was pictured as if it was in the society page.
So they thought this was really tough duty, huh?
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. But, and then, of course, it came to a rumbling stop when they were getting, to the point they needed people overseas, because
right.
The war had now been going on for a while.
So how long had you been doing that until?
I got there and, we would have been there in late winter maybe, and then it went through, and by time we got into around July or so,
So maybe half a year, a little over half a year.
Yeah, because maybe 3 or 4 months there during this period of time. And then we had to get assigned over to the they don't tell you, you're going to Korea necessarily. You're going to the, over that area. So they don't know exactly sometimes.
They just tell you going to the Far East?
Yeah, right. And then you get, and in those days, now I guess they move everybody by plane, but those days you took a slow boat to China,
Literally.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So were you, did you have any time to go home in all this?
Oh, yeah. I was then, I was given leave, for going home. And then I.
Do you remember how long it was?
7 days? Yeah, 7 days, 10 days, I don't remember exactly. And that's when I took my first airplane ride, because I decided, if I have to go home, I only have so much time. So I went over to National Airport, and I just walked up to the counter, and I said, "You got a plane going to Chicago?" "Yes, 1 in 5 minutes. You can dosage, you can get on a plane." And so I got on, I think it was, would have been Capital Airlines. It became United eventually. But I got in this plane before I had a chance to think about it, and there I went. So, over to Vet Chicago and at Midway, and that was it.
Okay, so you had your week at home in Chicago, and then then you had a report where?
Well, I'm back there, and then we eventually we were sent by train, and I eventually got out to.
To California?
I'm trying to think the process. It's a little questionable. I went to Colorado, you know, I think I went directly to California then, and back coming back, I went to.
Okay, so this is all by train.
Yeah, everything by train.
And was this troop train or was this?
No, it was just, never a troop train.
Never. Okay, so this was all passenger train.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then so went out there, and I went to California, and there's a. The way they get you on a plane on a trip, it's like going on a plane now. You know, they have overload, you know, so they always figure overload. Well, it turned out that the first two times I was scheduled to go, I was canceled and didn't go. Well, it was good or bad. I don't know which I look at now. I said probably it turned out all right. But my fellow I went to grade school and high school and everything, name is Charles Schultz, of course. S is, you know,
right.
Two S's, you know, you'd be close to each other quite a bit of the time. Well, he was working in Japan for a colonel, and on the first time my name was on the list, he saw it. He said, can we stop this and get him off and have him work here with us? He's fine, do that. So I wasn't on that. So by the time I was on one, he missed it, and I went right through to boat landed in Yokohama, and then we went out and took a boat trip over to Incheon.
Okay, and so then, your family, did they know where you were going? Did they know you were, they knew you were going to that area?
Yeah, right. I don't remember exactly when they knew I was actually going to Korea, but eventually that's what
You took a boat. Do you remember anything about the trip?
No, it was a short trip. It's, you know, from they just go up the coast a little ways, you know, and then maybe it was a day or two, a couple of days, you know, and then you go into the harbor at Incheon, and they got you to shore, and then it was at nighttime, and they put us in a truck, and they put us down, and this fellow who had... I was real close with, happened to be on the ship with me, because he had been later than me, but because of all the misses I was getting,
right.
He popped me. So he was a fellow who went to the same high school with, like, being a real close friend afterwards and during that period of time. Well, we were taken to what they call group. It was ended up in a construction battalion, but we were part of a group. And the group was in Yeongdong-po, which is across the river from Seoul, Han River, and he was an architect, and he was assigned to the group. But I was then, that same night that we were there, I was sent to the construction battalion, which is just a short distance away, happened to be, and that's where I was eventually assigned.
Okay.
But I could see him occasionally, you know, because he was real close, we'd walk over here.
Would, do you remember anything about your living quarters, what it was like?
Just trying to think. There was a bombed out textile plant.
Okay.
Okay, and most of the textile workers were women, so things were kind of on the small side, everything, and they were short people anyway. And so we had this patio between the sections of it, and we had these little rooms, and we stayed in, and it wasn't too bad. And then we had the back section was where a motor pool was, and then we had guard posts around, you could. The shower was huge. It was way bigger than this room, and you just, it was a round area in the center, and the shower heads over there, and you all went out there, and that's the way they took their showers. And other than that, wasn't anything significant. We had to walk kind of through this old building, get over to where we had our vehicles. We had a three-quarter ton truck that, being the survey crew, that's what I was in. I had to get in, we had to move around in this three-quarter ton truck because we had to carry our equipment and things like that.
Okay. Do you remember anything about meals or anything you did for recreation? Or?
Well, the kind of meals were nothing significant. I remember the first meal was fantastic, but then after that
it went downhill
from there on.
Okay.
But other than that, it was just a just kind of like a job in a way, you know.
Right. And what were your responsibilities on
that? Well, okay. The way the war went, you know, we went in and we pushed up north, and we got up real far north, and then the Chinese came in. Well, what happened was, as they pushed down, they went to the down towards Seoul, and we wanted to stop them at the Han River. So and there was a few other places too that had some bridges. So we had the highway bridge, and then there was three railroad bridges, and two of the bridges were one way, one direction, and or the other way coming back. And they were actually, I remember looking at the bridge, they were from American Bridge had made the steel for them originally. Mm-hmm. And so we had blown out the supports for them. So the bridges were not using. We didn't want them coming down and using these bridges to get further south. So the battalions, you know, construction battalion, we rebuilt these things. So we rebuilt these supports, put new temporary supports and drove piles and that type of thing. Because you drive piles in, of course, you're worried about settlement and so forth.
Right.
So survey crew, I used to have to climb up on these bridges and take my survey transit over my level then, because I was checking elevation, and climb and walk on these ties and over this river, you know, and then set it up somehow. And then once in a while, if a train would come down, I'd have to run and get down on top of a pier and wait while the train went past. And so that was our job, do that, and then we had this, did a little work on the main highway bridge, but that wasn't too bad, but these railroad bridges, then we had groups of fellows, platoons, and sometimes smaller groups, and other places where there was a bridge, and I can't remember the name of the town, but it was up north a little ways, there was a huge bridge. The whole bridge was sinking down into the water, and we were slowly putting piles and timbers and so forth, and raising this whole thing up. But the Koreans are doing that. We just had a few people there to help, guide what they're doing. So I had to go up there, and I had to do some work there, check some elevations, and then went to another location for something else. So we had these people spread around. So my job was where they had any kind of surveying had to be done, I would go out and take a little trip in the country, and went by Panmunjom and all those famous places, and sometimes there was little smoke powder you could see shooting over our heads with the artillery. It was our side shooting, but it was the war was going on, so they're doing things.
So it sounds like most of your work was with bridges.
Well, we put a little temporary bridge in. I had to lay out. There, mostly bridges there, but there was a few other things that were going on.
What other kind of projects did you
do? I don't remember significant. That was most of the work was on the bridges. There may have been something else, but nothing strikes me right now. And so then, that was there. And then they got this assignment to four of us to go down to this island of Jeju-do, Jeju and then Do meaning island, Jeju-do, and that was 180 miles off the coast, and it was a very beautiful place it's a vacation land of Korea, and they were being used. It was being used by the South Korean Army, and they had they were training their soldiers there, and so they wanted a bigger space, so I had to go down there and fly in, because there was the only way to get there. And then we stayed there for 3 weeks and took measure of what they needed and laid it out and that sort of thing. And once once a week, we got a day off, which was unusual because we weren't getting days off. And I was able to walk up into the mountains and beautiful air, big 6,000-foot volcano, and beautiful area and beautiful shoreline, and leftover artillery support and hangar the Japanese had put in for World War II, and took a lot of pictures. And as you walked along, the pheasants would fly up in the air because they would be out there in the field because there's quite a pheasant. And then one time, one of the generals came down, which one it was, not Ridgeway or Van Fleet or somebody, and they went pheasant hunting in the morning. So I happened to have guard duty that morning, and so they were getting their jeeps ready to go out and go pheasant hunting. But it was a pleasant period of time, 3 weeks, a very beautiful area. But I had flown out of Kimpo to go, but I had planning to go there the day before Thanksgiving, didn't want us going on Thanksgiving. But when we got out to Kimpo, there was 36 fighter bombers going out for a bombing mission. So we were going to take some foreign plane, Turkey or something, off rusted plane. They were going to fly us down there, but then we had to wait for these planes. By that time, it was too dark, and the plane had no landing lights, and the field had no landing lights because it was just on this island, you know, where there was really no airfield except a flat area. So we couldn't go. So the next day was Thanksgiving, and we left on Thanksgiving and had our Thanksgiving dinner on the plane and took Thanksgiving dinner to the people that were working, you know, our group down there. And so I had second Thanksgiving dinner there. So that was kind of that day. It was kind of sad in one respect. I get a chance to walk out when I was in Yongdong Po, which is the town where we're, and I'd walk out and walk to the town, and you had little places like going to Maxwell Street, you could buy little things from people and so forth. And there was a people, because some of them could speak a little English, and I said that my minister from my home church in Chicago had been a missionary here. I said, "Do you know in this town?" He said, "Did you know these people, who it could be?" And they told me. So it wasn't, only about a block away. So I went over there, I met the people, and they invited me for Thanksgiving dinner. And of course, there I was on the plane leaving. So I never had to even tell much that I couldn't make it. I felt bad about that,
right?
Because they probably had something special made up for kimchi or something. So
it was a little different Thanksgiving for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I had worse ones, but that was better.
Okay.
Then I was.
So that was like 3 weeks.
3 weeks, right?
Okay.
And then, so what happened was the outfit that I was in, the Conscription Battalion, was transferred while I was down there, and so they were sent to an island called Kogi-do, which is just off of Busan, just a short distance off of Busan. And so I had to join them there. So we took the plane out of Chechi. The only place we could land would be up in Taegu. Went up there, it was nighttime, and we got there, and they hadn't given us any food. I don't know why, but they didn't. So we had nothing to eat. So we went out in the street into the areas and bought stuff, like a beggar, bought it off the street, and bought K rations or something, just had our dinner that way. Then we got on this little crazy train that took us down to Busan, a junky old train, that night, there in the morning. And then they like to take their trains at night.
Okay.
Because they didn't use any lights on them or anything, because when you went through that area, it was kind of mountainous,
mm-hmm.
and they'd have snipers up there, And so the...
So they kept everything dark.
Yeah, kind of dark, so they take your train rides usually at night when they went through that area.
Okay.
I went down there and got in the boat, and this one over, the small ship, and went over to the island. Where we had a prisoner of war island.
It
was 180,000 North Korean and Chinese prisoners, and we had these compounds.
And what was the island?
Koji.
That was Koji. Koji. Okay.
And so...
And about what time frame was this? What year?
Okay, that would have been... This is 51. It would have been the fall of... I don't remember exactly. Go from Thanksgiving, 3 weeks, then down to... So it was right at the end of the year.
Right at the end of 51. Or starting into 52. Okay.
So it had been right then. And so went into that period of time, and it was south, so the weather wasn't too bad. And we had the... we stayed in, the island was broken up at the compound because of the prisoners. And so we were in, our place where we lived was compound 75. And what they had done is they had built these frame buildings there along barracks. And they had the prisoners do a lot of work in those days. And so they made these big blocks out of mud, essentially. Mm-hmm. And they tried to put something to stabilize it, more or less. They had grass and things they put
like
in.
Like mud bricks?
Yeah, real big. And then they built those up to make the walls. And then they plastered like stucco on both sides of it. And then that was your structure. I think prisoners had done a lot of
So were those the buildings the prisoners lived in? Were those the buildings you lived in, or both?
That was what we lived in. And prisoner buildings, I don't think they were made quite that way. I don't remember exactly. I got pictures of them. I had to go back and look at it. I never had that much experience with the construction of the buildings.
So how were the prisoners organized? Were they in, how many people would be in one of the compounds?
Well, best I can recollect is this compound 76, we had 6,000.
Okay.
And then there was there was a woman's compound, that there were some women prisoners. But then there was an officer's compound, and the rest of them were just general compounds.
Okay.
And in logical order,
right,
around, but I don't remember exactly any particular order to them, just the fact they probably kept building them as they brought them down,
Right. So you were doing... surveying and things like that. Well, so what was your responsibility at this camp?
Well, the main thing we were doing, and I should mention that we were part of the Army integration, and we were replacing an all-black construction battalion, and the Army was breaking that up, and that's why our battalion was sent down there just to an integrated group to go in there.
Which was new for
the
military.
Yeah, at that time, right. And so that's how we got assigned that. And of course,
was there any anything said, anything done, anything that was a little unusual that you noticed?
Well, we never even saw them.
You replaced them completely.
We went in, and of course I came in there. I wasn't there in the day they went in originally, because mm-hmm. I was sent from. So I was there maybe a few days afterwards.
Okay.
I don't really know exactly the transition period there. But when we went in, we had obviously major projects, and because of being an island, we were trying to control water and that mm-hmm. type of thing. And there was a small dam that they were building, earth dam, that was mostly built, but it had some problems, some leakage problems, and we were trying to repair that, and then I did some work surveying there, and then we were building a real big one, brand new one, and at that point we were letting the water go around it, weren't filling up this area, and so I had to do a lot of work out there, and you have to do, you had to, of course, get the right elevations and things like that, so there was a lot of things that were had to be done. I had to go all the way over to the shoreline and run a series of levels to get the actual elevation because, mm-hmm. everything is based on, this, that. If you don't know where you're working, how that relates elevation-wise to someplace
else.
You can't really figure it out engineering-wise. So I went all the way over and then I checked with a benchmark and it turned out pretty accurate. And so I did that. So there wasn't an awful lot of work to do other than this type of thing. And the outfit I was with, engineering, 453rd Engineering Construction Battalion, was a reserve outfit called up from Spokane, Washington. So quite a few of them were knew each other from, one was the police chief and, then different ones. So, they were congenial people. They weren't regular Army, per se, and they were just like we have now.
They were more civilian than Army.
Yeah, probably,
right.
Yes, right. And so, I don't know, there's just a routine type thing. You go out and do your work in the day and then go out and there wasn't much. We had a little gymnasium.
Okay.
Because it was kind of unusual. No. Excuse me. No, the gymnasium. I'm sorry. The gymnasium was up in the mainland. I'm sorry. I'm wrong there.
So how did you pass the time? Or what did you do for entertainment or relaxation?
No. There really wasn't any. There was a 7-day week, so you mm-hmm. didn't have an awful lot of things to do. They did plan an outing for one day and turned out to be kind of a disaster. They decided, we're going to take you fishing. So they rented this ship, boat, out of way quite a ways away along the water. And we went out there in two groups in the morning and afternoon. But the storm was coming and it was a tail end of a typhoon. So it wasn't too good, and so the fishing was terrible, and we got back, and then that night the weather and the water, the rain was coming at horizontal, and of course I was my bunk was at the end, and I was coming in from that end, and it was getting behind the cement that was on the face of these bricks, and it made it fluid.
Right.
And so I was in my sleeping bag at night, and all of a sudden I felt this thud on top of me, and the wall had collapsed on top of me, and I had all this mud and everything in my face and the whole works. And then, of course, they had to fix that, of course. Everything was flooded, and we had a latrine was real big, and they had rows of these seats and holes and things mm-hmm. and elevated, but there was all water, so you had to walk on top of these seats to get over to find an empty one. it wasn't too pleasant. It caused, of course, you're building dams and things, so, these things are great after the dam is built, but you have problems. And so then in the construction town, you had S1, S2, S3, and S4, and we were on a major road being, something like a back street here, but we had our offices, and then we had a little latrine on the outside, and it was you went out and then you would drop down about a foot or so, and then you went into this door, and the door swung out into this area. Well, we had right above it was a little dam, all this water that came in. So there was one of our majors was in the latrine, and the dam broke, and water came down and filled up this hole, and he couldn't get the door open. It was against the water. Everybody got a good laugh out of that one, except him.
Except him, right.
Because he wasn't very laughable in the first place. But, we had some, you know, pretty good, things went, you know, pretty smooth. We were doing our job and so forth.
Now, were you able to communicate with your family during this time?
Just letters. No,
just letters. Were they censored? Were they?
Oh, no. No? Okay. I still have the letters.
Do you have, did you get any packages from home?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of things did
you? Oh, cookies. My mom was a cookie baker. Cookie and cake. She couldn't send cake, but the cookies. She sent cookies all the time. And
your buddies like that.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. But things turned sour. The UN. Because this is a UN war, remember?
Right.
Okay. Now, they decided that they were going to interview these 180,000 prisoners and separate them, the ones that are the good ones from the bad ones, you might say.
Okay.
So we set up these little posts out in the open all over the place. And they'd get in line, you know, and they'd walk through and they'd interview. They had, you know, people who could interpret best they could. And so they ended up with about 90,000 that we called good guys and the bad guys. And so they took this 90,000, they brought in ships and the kind of, you know, opened up the front, you know, and you walk right in, mm-hmm. drive in, and they just loaded all these prisoners in, and they took them various places. Some of them went into the South Korean army, some of them went different, I don't know where they all went, but they went different places. And then we end up, you know, with 90,000. But now
so you ended up with the 90,000 bad guys.
Bad guys, yeah. So now, you know, they would be standing on top of their roofs, waving flags and doing all kinds of things. And they were always protesting and so forth. So we had a general named Dodd. And he was basically a kind of humanitarian, nice guy. And he tried to appease them best he could. So they made up an arrangement with them to come out and with a loudspeaker and talk to them, to an interpreter, around supper time one day. And, well, this gave these prisoners an opportunity to plan something. So when you went into these compounds, you had the gate that opened up, and then you had a little passageway that went in, then another gate inside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he got there close to him, and a group of prisoners that were coming back from doing some work. Because we used to send up what you call daisy chains of prisoners up into the mountains and so forth. And we were building these bricks, bricks and stones and things.
Right.
On the face of these dams we were building, you had to get them someplace, you know. And so they would go up and look for them, and then they'd pass them down one person to another to the bottom. Well, then after the day was over with, they'd bring them in back, march them back, and they'd go into their compound. Well, they were coming back right by this General Dodd, and they broke rank, and they grabbed the general, and they took him into this area, and then so they were all ready for him, and they threw blankets over the fence so you couldn't see where they did what they did with him. So they had him in there for 3 days, and they made concessions, you know, to get him out. They wanted 7 women from the women's compound. And they had, I don't remember all the different details, so they finally got the general out.
Did they honor the concessions?
Yeah. And then, of course, they were doing a lot of demonstrating and so forth. So now, of course, my job really intensified because I had to lay out. By this time, I entered the army as a recruit, they call
mm-hmm.
it, and then I became a private, and then eventually, before I get through, I became a corporal, And then they froze all advancements in the service. Because what was happening was they were sending over so many people from the states who they had made sergeants and so forth, and they weren't qualified.
Right.
Because they brought in there and they gave them, they kept promoting them, they came over and they take over people and they couldn't do it.
Right.
So I took over a master sergeant's job and I was a corporal. So I was in charge of laying out all these brand new compounds. And so we made maximum security compounds. And then what we did is we took this compound 76 where they had all the problems. And there was the way the island was built is, you know, with all these dams and all the things. We had big gullies that ran down along the roads. And so that became the passageway to get prisoners out if you had to get them out.
Okay.
So we got what they call concertina wire, which is spiral with barbed wire.
Right.
This is barbed wire to this particular kind. And we laid, we had to do that and lay it all along these ditches. And then the infantry.
You're talking about on top of the ditches?
Along the edges.
Along the edges, yeah.
And maybe I'll backtrack a little bit. What had happened was we had built these new compounds and put them in line with where these ditches were. I had to lay out a sawmill. They're big and they had to very carefully laid out with levels and their transits and so forth. And so I laid out this, and we got all this wood and we made up all these new posts that were used for the compound. And they brought the airborne in from mainland because they needed workers. They became now construction workers, and they worked on building these new compounds, and that's what their job was. And then we got it all ready, and this one morning, break a day, and we were in compound 75, which is right across the road from 76, and so we knew what they were doing, so we got out and we stood along the fence, and I had my camera with me, of course, and then the infantry cut holes into the barbed wire that was there on the old compound 76, and they stormed in, and there was a big fight, and I think 76 prisoners, or not maybe 76, 55 or something, I guess it was, were killed, and we maybe lost one man, I don't remember. And then we forced them into this, between this concertina wire, and forced them down into the new compound we built.
Wow.
And that was the end of compound 76. And then after that, I was asked to go out and check the officer compound because they thought that the officers had built the tunnels. Like, you
know, okay,
you hear about all these. There's always a lot of talk about tunnels here and there, but quite often there isn't any. This is conjecture. So I never did find any. Just went along and then started to move the people more orderly after that. They didn't require, military force or anything.
Did you have any personal experience with dealing with some of these folks?
No, just in the beginning, in the very early days when they were peaceful, I did surveying inside the compounds. After that, you wouldn't go in.
Right.
But then they had made a lot of drawings of anti-UN, anti-US drawings.
And you had some of those pictures showed us, right?
Yes, and some of the fellows that went in there, I didn't go in personally after the 76 was stormed. They laid them out there, and I took some pictures, and I took some of them.
Can you describe what some of those pictures were?
Well, they were, basically, they showed the UN, the US flag laying on the ground with their tanks and their flags rolling over, and there was one on one, I can remember. And this was kind of the attitude. Of course, you can't blame them. They have this that they're under these circumstances, and they don't like it. We would be doing this, we'd be mad too. So that's the way it took place. But in the meantime, we were our people were you know, slowly being taken back, you know, they were reserve officers, they were getting called home and taken, so our office was slowly changing. And but you know, the living conditions weren't too good. One crazy experience I had one night in my barracks, we had a lot of rats, you know, because you figure you have all this stuff, like the mud and food laying around, probably.
River rats.
And they were big, they were big rats. And so I had a big rat trap next to my bunk. And I heard a little noise, and I looked. I looked above and took my flashlight, looked up, and I saw this big rat staring down at me. So he kind of moved away. So I went down, put my rat trap, put it up there, turned it off, and wham!
Yeah.
I got him right away. That was the end of him. But
so with all the rats there, what other, beside having rat traps, I mean, were you able to keep up with that, or what did you do?
Well, that wasn't, we could keep up with it. Nobody got bit or anything.
Right. Now, while you were there, tell us a little bit about your living quarters and everyday things like meals.
Well, we had a mess hall, and like you might expect, we were an area that the country wanted to forget existed, because there was a we'd hear about Gitmo now and so forth, and so it became real popular, and you didn't hear much about it. But so the result is, once in a while, you know, you get somebody would come there, but usually it was after you start having little problems and somebody would show up. So they kind of wanted to forget that we existed. So our rations were pretty bad. The cooks did the best they could, but we weren't getting it was dwindling. So we had actually had to go out on the market and buy things, but you had to be careful what you bought because of, you know, getting diseases and things. Seafood was good, and but the some of the other foods you had to be very careful, cook it certain ways and so forth. And we had, you know, a lot of rice and that type of thing. But basically,
so you had to supplement your diet.
Well, there wasn't any way of supplement. No place to get it, you know. You just ate what you had, and unless you got something in the mail from home or something.
So, what did you do then for any type of relaxation? Were there card games? Were there?
That was. I suppose I don't really do much about ever doing anything. It just seemed like you work most of the day, and
then
at nighttime, maybe you
read.
And we didn't have much. Some places, like on up in the mainland, we had movies and things like that. But there wasn't an awful.
What kind of things were you able to read while you were there?
There wasn't anything particular. Whatever I got a hold of.
Books, magazines,
Stars and
newspaper,
or something like that. You know, anything that was available. But it just was, you know. You get out to do things, and of course, you know, we're building these dams, and then we get out into the country a little bit once in a while. And I had the vehicle, so I took a little side trips once in a while to see what's going on. Ran across an interesting situation. Korean was out surveying, and he probably don't know what this is, but he was using a plane table.
Okay.
A plane table is just like this figure, and I'm putting a drafting board on top of a tripod, and you have a little instrument in there that has a peep sight, and you can level it and that sort
of thing.
And you just, it has a straight edge, and you look at something and you draw your line and you make your maps by using plane tables. So he was doing that, so I had taken a picture of that. I thought that was interesting because I never had used anything that quite that. I had used plane tables, not quite as crude as he had it, but it was interesting. You know, it was nice to get out, you know, get around once in a while, so we did get out a little bit, because being in the survey crew, we
You got to see the countryside a little.
Yeah, a little bit more so than, but it was pretty well isolated because most of the stuff coming in and out was the ships that pull into the little
right.
harbor we had there, and we had the airfield was just the roads. You'd close mm-hmm. the road off and you'd bring a little plane in, and so there wasn't too much going on. Well, of course, we had all the, after the riots and everything, we had all kinds of big shots coming down to
check things out, right.
Right, yeah, see what, and the, of course, then you had, obviously, then you have the press, so of course, they were down there, they'd have their stuff set up, so their trucks and so forth, they'd get in there from the ships, and they'd take pictures of what was going on, the people, you know, they usually were, there was always somebody that would protest somewhere along the line. But it wasn't the... But you know, then, we during that period, we were more military because we had to worry about what was going to happen.
Right.
And all those people, even though you had guns and everything like that, you know, uprisings can't happen. So we had to sometimes... We had more guard duty than we usually had, and we had mm-hmm. to walk around with our helmets and our live ammunition where we hadn't done that before.
And, so how long were you there?
Well, I left around the beginning of September.
Of 50?
Yeah, I was in the Army just under 2 years.
Okay.
So I went in to see the draft started 18 months.
Right.
And then they extended it 6 months more. And so I was just under, by the time I got out, it was just going on October 10th, and this was now end of September.
Okay, so you were, your time was almost done.
Yeah, right, yeah. So that I just got sent back, and there I just went to, on a little ship back to, Busan, and then another boat took me over to Sasebo, Japan, and then eventually we went back. It took me, I think, 14 days to go over on a Navy ship,
uh-huh.
but we came back much shorter, about 9-10 days or so on a merchant marine ship. But see, the thing was, because I hadn't got promoted because of the freeze. When you on a ship, you do things according to your
rank.
Your rank. See, when I went over originally, I was just a private, and I had guard duty, and so that was interesting because if you're on guard duty on a ship, you slept in the brig. And the brig was the lowest part of the ship.
Right.
And that is an awful place to be because of the waves. And when you go out of Frisco, as soon as you get outside past the bridge, you hit the rough water. And everybody was sick. They're all at the, all, but I didn't, I slept on the deck the whole time I was going. I never got sick, but I was on guard duty
right.
quite a bit of the time. So, but coming back, of course, I was just a corporal, and of course, when the people coming back, a lot of them had higher positions because of the situation. And so I had got assigned to the mess hall, but it wasn't a long trip, so I was there one time. But it was kind of funny because they put me on dishing out rice.
And the last guys, thing you wanted to
well,
see.
Well, last thing, the best people coming through the line, they didn't want rice. So I just stood there the whole time. Nobody took anything.
So when did you know when you were going to be going back, or did they just come and...
No. You kind of knew about when it was going to be, and they just come and said, well, you're going to leave on a certain day, get all your stuff together. I had, you know, you had sent stuff home, and... So, when I was up north, and I was on the mainland, we had this one group, and there was a couple guys, sergeants or what they were. They were there, and they And they were, it was kind of funny because they had this big, you probably have heard about this, you had a big pot, and every time you got served breakfast and you had fruit juice or something like that, they'd pour it in this pot. So they were steaming this stuff up to make liquor, see? so they had a Japanese transit. And it wasn't bad. And so I gave them $25 or something for it, and I got it back, and I sent it back home, so I still have it. So I got that from the mainland. But I look back, and I the experiences, you know, the three different places I was at all were so much different, and they all had their own little stories, you know, that
right.
Yung Dung Po on the, you know, on the Han River there, it had, it was right, you could overlook the Han River and look over to Seoul, and Han River was fairly shallow and real wide, and right along the on the Yung Dung Po side was the Seoul City Airport, and they used to, I saw kind of something unusual. We were there, just sitting there, and we're coming back from someplace, and on a little hill, watching what was going on. This some guy, I think he must have been from South Africa, a blonde guy, a Dutchman or something, and he came down with his, they were practicing landing, and he came down and hit his wing, and it went wing over wing, you know, came down, got out of the plane, and didn't get hurt, that was a highlight of looking around, but it was a most of the time there I spent looking at the things that we were doing, you know, the bridges and that sort of thing. And then once in a while I had to go into we had the movies that we'd get. It's like getting movies at the library, you know, you get a movie, then you got to show it to everybody.
Right.
So I had to go into Seoul. We had some people in there, and so I had to drive in there, and we had a Jeep, and so I drove in with the Jeep, and came back, and of course it was nighttime, and when you got near the bridge, all the lights were out,
mm-hmm.
So that was kind of tricky. You had to go and drive, and they had some repair work and so forth, and get through there without the running off into the road or something. But other than that, it was, I did travel around, went up, you know, they did different areas of the mainland there. And so I kind of covered from north to south and when I was in Korea. And,
right. When you were going home, when you were going to be discharged, did your family know? Did you tell them?
Oh yeah, there was no problem there, and I went to ended up and had a nice experience coming back, and we were near Colorado Springs, and so we got back there and they said, well, we can't get you out right now. We got some things to do. So you can have 3-day pass. So I said, okay. I was with another fellow from Chicago. And so, I didn't know before then.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, okay, let's go up to Pikes Peak. So we went over there and you could take the train up,
mm-hmm.
or you could take the car. So we took the car, and we got up there, and we walked around, and we met this man, and he said he was from Chicago. Oh. And so he was the salesman for that famous, I can't think of it now, Arizona Magazine or whatever it is.
Okay.
And so he said he was there and doing interviewing people in the Broadmoor Hotel and that sort of thing. So we talked to him quite a bit, and he said, well, let me take you down. I got to rent a car up here. So he took us down. He took us all over, went to all the famous places, Garden of Gods and everything like that. And then we went to the Broadmoor Hotel, and usually there's like a kind of a restaurant area that's not real fancy.
Uh-huh.
But then they have the real main dining room. Well, you couldn't get in the main dining room unless you stayed there. Well, this little other little restaurant, they had a wedding going on there. It was closed. So we had no place to go. So the guy was a salesman, of course. They can handle things. So he went up to the maitre d', and the maitre d' had just come back from service. And he said, I'll get you in. So he got us into this table. There's a princess sitting over here and somebody else. So we had dinner at the Broadmoor. And then
you kept ending up in society,
yeah,
didn't
right,
you?
Yeah, right. I met everybody. And so then we went to his house in Chicago when we went back and everything.
So where were you formally discharged?
Well, I got discharged out in Colorado. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then you flew home, drove home?
No. Yeah, you didn't do that. I flew out to California originally, but
right.
Other than that, was trains.
Train? Okay.
So we took the...
Did your family meet you at the station?
Yeah, maybe down there.
Was it Union Station or...?
No, it wasn't Union. It was a little small. I think it's closed now.
Okay.
There was one a little north of there. No, a little south of there, I mean.
So your family must have been really happy to have you home.
Right, yeah. I was the only child, so made a difference.
Okay. So what was it like when you first got back? What was the first thing you did that you'd missed? Do you remember?
We went fishing. But it was
better than the fishing you did in Korea, huh?
Oh, man. It wasn't much better, but we went up north, and of course, this was late now. We were talking about, in October, and it was May cold. Didn't do much. And then, from then on, it was just a matter of, finding a job. It was easier than it is now.
So did you find a job easily?
I had, before I went in that little short period, mm-hmm. I had worked a temporary job for inventorying and appraising. Then so I got a job as a structural engineer for the Corps of Engineers. And so I worked in the merchandise market.
Uh-huh.
And I did one very interesting job, which was hush-hush at the time. We put a bunch of Nike sites in around Chicago, when that's mm-hmm. where we had those anti-aircraft, those units they were putting in, and they weren't saying much about them. The drawings were made in Washington, and they were made universal drawings. You could use them any place, but you had to
right.
adapt them to the site. So
right.
I had to work on one that was being put along a lakefront, and of course you had a lot of water to contend with underneath, so you had to build... I had to make it construction-wise underneath so it wouldn't leak mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. Worked on that and then did some project like that.
Did you take advantage of GI Bill or anything like that? Did you go back to school?
I had the VA hospital, I had a little work on a pineal cyst that had gotten worse in mm-hmm. the service. I had it before I went in, but it got worse in the service, so they took care of that. And aside from that, I think that was the only thing that I completed my education, and I look back and now maybe I should have gone for a master's or doctor or something afterwards, but I don't know. As at that point, I was kind of tired of being away,
right?
And so I just went job wise, one job after another for a while,
right. Have you kept in touch with any of the guys that you were with?
Just this Dino Samaroni, who was with me over in Korea. And not at the very end, he wasn't, but in stages there. And we'd have reunions for several years. People would come in from mm-hmm. different, and we had one guy who was in Chicago area, Gal Ducci, his name was. Cal Adushi, his name was, and so he came to that. But I thought I Samaroni, I talked to him as well. He said he's still in the area, but I haven't had any contact with him.
Do you belong to any veterans organizations, or did you just kind of settle back
into
civilian life?
I didn't do anything. I just hung around with some of the fellows that I knew from. I'd gone to school with, and then some of his friends and did that. And then I, one of the fellows I knew from church, he went down to the Chicago Temple Methodist Church, First mm-hmm. Methodist Church, Chicago. And so he got me to go down to a young adult group, and I went down there after church on Sunday nights and met my wife there.
Okay.
So that's kind of the way, direction I took.
Okay. So you settled back in, went into your career. When you look back on your time in the service and look at how it affected your life, what do you see?
Well, I see that the experience I had from a work standpoint,
mm-hmm.
I used that type of experience in some of my jobs I had. I had a number of different places before I finally ended up at the main job. And so I did surveying, and so I worked for a contractor and different things. So it was helpful from that standpoint. And of course, you develop a lot of leadership. Even though you're not officially like a leader, a platoon mm-hmm. leader or something like that, you if you have a responsibility, like laying out things and taking charge and getting instructions how to, that they want something done and so forth,
right.
That you get that training. And I had always been that kind of that type of person anyway, so I adapted to it all right. So but you do get that type of thing, and it builds up confidence in what you do. So I've been able to use that type of thing in the work I've done.
Okay. How did your time in the service affect the way you think about things, the way you think about the world, about the things that you see in the world today?
Well, of course, the prisoner aspect of it, you can't help from thinking about Gitmo and Guantanamo, and so that you kind of relate your experiences with what took place there, and so that kind of pushes you one way or the other looking at the situation. But other than that, I probably. Even though it was probably more job oriented than just a unit where you had strictly military duties all the time. So
mm-hmm.
it was helpful in work I did afterwards. So
right.
you kind of look back at it and you know those little military things took place and training and different things along the way, but. You have a tendency when you think about things, think of the constructive things that took place, and you don't hopefully get involved with some of the things you didn't like that well.
So because you were in a special type of job, you got training that really helped you when you got out.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's really how it was focused more than any military type of background.
Right. Yeah, and of course the military training, has good points too.
Mm-hmm.
it teaches you to. You have to follow instructions. Some people just never like to take anybody's orders from anything. Well, you get a point where you don't have any choice. You have to follow that routine. And so, you don't get, unless you're the son of the president of the company or something, you have to follow somebody's direction along the line. And so I was able to. Function. I've had jobs where it hasn't gone well.
Uh-huh.
And even the consulting work I do now, I have jobs that I don't like the way it goes.
Right.
So you have to kind of try to avoid the pitfalls best you can, or walk away from it if you have to. To balance the good and the bad.
Right. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to
add? Well, I suppose there is, but it's a there isn't anything. I'm trying to think of something that wasn't brought up. I think broadly, that's the types of things that my experiences were once I get out of basic training, my experiences have been more work oriented than they have been military oriented.
Okay. Well, in that case, we're going to go off record, and thank you for your story.
Okay, sure.